What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Operators Podcast. We got the man, the myth, the legend, Cody, leading up, charging a brand new marketing podcast. This is a little intro into that. He's going to teach you some shit about marketing and stores and what's going on Meta. He has the real conspiracies. Cody, what's up, dude? How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me. I'm a huge fan of the show. It's like I said, it's the only one I listen to every week. I look up to you guys a lot, so I'm very excited to be here.
Dude, do not look up to us. We look up to you. This is episode 50. You're the special guest. We got him, guys. We got the man himself. We'll dive into it next week or right now. There's a new marketing podcast. Click the link. You can listen to that, but stay here for a little bit.
It's crazy that we're at 50 episodes, by the way. I can't believe these people actually listen to you, Sean. It's crazy. I mean, Cody, I'm sure they'll tune in for Cody, though. Cody, who are you using for inventory management right now?
We use NetSuite.
Ooh, that's why your Meta ads are broken. Yeah.
Really? You know, we tried to make it work with NetSuite, and it was so hard. Like, that's why we went to Fulfill. I mean, does it really work?
It's the most expensive software we have.
That doesn't mean it's any good. Maybe it's really expensive to make it work. Sean, what do you think?
Well, I was at dinner the other night with someone who uses NetSuite, and they said it was $500,000 per year to maintain it, and Fulfill is less than a fifth of that. So based on that alone, I don't care how good NetSuite is. I'm never giving anybody $500,000 a year.
That we can actually pay for- use NetSuite for our accounting, and that was there before we implemented Fulfill, and we just couldn't get comfortable with NetSuite's inventory and WMS, and that's why we went with Fulfill. And we are getting close to moving our accounting over to Fulfill. That's probably going to be a 2025 project, but they've just crushed it for us. I mean, honestly, they just really, really crushed it for us.
Dude, I mean, if they can do your business, they can do my business. That's for sure.
You know, in the hedge fund world, there was Tiger Management, right? Tiger Global, huge. One of the biggest hedge funds forever. And they have a ton of people who left and started new ones. And they're called Tiger Cubs, dude. These are the operator cubs right here.
Dude, Connor will not do the first episode. If we start calling it Operator Cubs, he's like, I'm out, dude. All right, Jason, well, you have a story, dude. Pitch the Panzerism.
Okay, so we're gonna change things up today and start with the Panzerism, because I think something really crazy happened to me over the last week or so. And I'm not gonna get into all the details, but the Panzerism is trust no one. That's the Panzerism. Unfortunately, you really can't trust anyone. And the offshoot to that Panzerism is never let an agency own any of your stuff, okay? And I've seen this on Twitter before. I've heard this happen before. An agency sets up your ad account underneath their business manager. And you know what? Guess whose ad account it is? It ain't yours, it's theirs. So there's an agency who we've worked with for many years. And when I say many years, I mean like since 2018, since before I arrived at Hexclad. I'm not gonna name their name right now. And it's not one of the agencies that I often talk about. It's not Homestead, it's not Sharma. You know, I work with both of them. It's neither of them. But we received an email saying that they are terminating their relationship with us and we need to buy from them our Facebook page, Instagram page, ad account, Metapixel, Shopify, because they set it up originally, Klaviyo, by April 5th. We need to buy all these things from them.
How much?
Oh, and no, no price. Please call our lawyer to discuss the price.
I have so many things that I want to ask. So
we got our Klaviyo pushed over to us, so no problem. We got our Shopify pushed over to us, no problem. Thanks to Harley and the team at Shopify. They were great. Thank you to Klaviyo. Klaviyo was the easiest. Shopify was very helpful. Meta is proving to be a bit more challenging, as one could imagine, but we are making good progress there. And so trust no one. I mean, by the way, this agency has made over $4 million through the life of the relationship with Hexclad. And I mean, this is unbelievable.
Can I ask a follow-up question? I don't know how much you're talking about it, but was there something that pushed them to, like, did you cancel the contract? Like, I mean, it's inexcusable, but why did they fuck up an amazing deal? Like, did they just get money hungry, jealous, what?
There's definitely a money hungry component to it. You know what it is? It's a really an interesting example of how people overvalue their contribution to something. Like, you know who deserves the credit for Hexclad's success? Danny Weiner and Cole McRae, who took all of the risk, who poured their life savings into it, and got the thing to $30 million without me, right? Like, they deserve all the credit. They deserve to own as much as they own, right? I came on board. I think I did a lot of great things, and we've scaled the business 20x, but I couldn't have done it without them. But, you know, everyone thinks they're owed something because they did something around the table. But the truth is, they did nothing. They were in the right place at the right time, and they got, you know, they were just lucky to be there. They didn't do anything special. They just happened to be like, there was like a really great line and they were the running back, you know, and we gave them the ball and the line smashed everyone, opened the hole, and they ran it in for a touchdown, you know? So that's the
end. Success is shared, but failure is denied. Like, if Hexclad was bankrupt or out of business, like, they wouldn't put in money. They'd be like, oh, that sucks, new client, right? But as soon as there's ever like a lottery winner or a rock star, it's like, yeah, I was the vocal coach. Everyone tries to fucking take credit, but.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say to answer your question, Sean, is that over the years, we have sort of changed the role of that agency, but they had business for life with us. And that's like a flaw of ours at Hexclad. We're very loyal. Danny and Cole are very loyal. We have a lot of charity cases that we're still paying at Hexclad. Like, we just do it.
Just joking. Just joking. <'cause we> can't.
Including me, maybe I'm the charity case. But like, we didn't tell them we were done. We didn't tell them we weren't going to pay him anymore. You know, they were making very good money to not do a lot of work. And I just think that, you know, they finally were just like, I mean, they're delusional in what they believe has been their contribution to our.
Well, I want to pull Cody into this conversation because, surprise, episode 50, special guest, we have Cody from Jones Run Beauty. Cody, would you ever do this to somebody?
Absolutely not. First of all, thank you for having me. I'm honored. I love the show. It's the one I listen to pretty much all the time, and excited to be part of a little spinoff. And
big spinoff. Sorry, Connor. It's a very large, big deal. But yeah, Cody.
Cody's a cub. Cody's an operator cub.
I don't mind. No, man, Jason, I'm sorry that happened to you. Glad it turned out okay.
Can I ask you a question on trust, though? Since you're saying trust nobody, do you start people off when you hire somebody new or you engage with somebody new, do are you a person who you like is trust earned? So do you start like from a zero and they build it up, or do you naturally, and you and Danny and Cole, do you guys naturally trust people and then it erodes? Like where do you land between those two?
Well, I mean, I guess my opinion is changing. My answer is changing on that, right?
Go like, back to a week before.
That's the last week. You know, I mean, we like at the stage that we are, we have to verify more, right? Trust but verify. We just have to be. We have been that way for a while, but I think really what this is an example of the fact that as you become bigger and more successful. And, you know, I'm sure Cody has seen this with the success of Jones Road Beauty. I know Sean sees it all the time with Ridge. You know, people, they're just coming for you. Like, they are coming for you. It's actually really sad. Like, Sean used to always talk about how much he spends on legal and how he's got all these great lawyers. And I was like, you know, that must really suck that Sean has to spend so much of his time thinking about legal. But in like the last 6 months, I've spent way too much time thinking about legal. None of it our fault, by the way. Like all of it just like craziness. And I'm not talking about like the bullshit ADA stuff that we used to get 2 years ago, which we don't get anymore. There's just like random, just like the most random, like people are just seeing dollar signs and they're coming after you.
Yeah, I have a good, you know, I'm going to piggyback on your story. Everyone overplays their hand. Like the thing about like, you know, legal battles or whatever, and this is what that agency did. They overplayed their hand. They're like, we have the fucking Shopify account. They're going to give us millions of dollars. And what they don't realize is now you're going to go after them for extortion. You're going to go after them for fraud, and they are going to lose everything. And if you want to edit this out, you can edit this out. But like, you've just bankrupted these people, and it's because they overplayed their hand. And every time we're in lawsuits, people try to get settlements. They try to like screw us over. I'm like, oh, you don't get it that I'm playing a different game than you. And like, this is going to end so badly for you. And you're the 10th person who's tried this with me, right?
It's just a reputational damage, Sean. Like, forget the legal. You're when you make a move like that, you're scuttling your position in a category.
Yeah, you say they're like, yeah, the reputation is going to be ruined, but they will have to spend $500,000 defending this.
And yeah. Then, like, legal, I don't think people realize how expensive legal is. But like, that's a whole other subject, but like, it's so expensive. This is the one thing I do. I love America. Don't get me wrong, but like, fucking hell, this country is litigious. It's just crazy at how much, like, you guys spend a weird amount of money on lawyers. It's crazy.
And the only one who wins is the lawyers.
The lawyers win always. We're not talking about lawyers today, though. No.
Well, the plaintiff's bar is very powerful. They donate a lot of money to government officials. So there you go. So it's all about the money.
Cody, you want to talk about marketing things?
Yeah, I was going to say, if you guys are down for that, if not, I'll go back to the Cub podcast.
Want to go over there to the marketing side of the world?
That's a good lead in, Jason. Maybe we'll take you with us.
I want the Cody Plofker secret sauce, please.
Yes. We've got a few subjects, right? Cody, why don't we let you take this away, man? Where do you want to start today? What do you think is like the most, you know, what's topic number one? What's the thing that people are going to want to get the most out of today?
So I was thinking about this the other day when we're planning the podcast with Connor. Sean, you might not know this. You're actually the first person I like got on a call with from Twitter. I like posted a screenshot. This was probably like 3.5 years ago. And you reached out and we chatted. I remember you had like a very deep V. You had like a shirt barely buttoned up. I think you're trying to hire me. I'm not sure, but you're actually one of the first people I talked to. This is really cool, kind of full circle. And I was going through like, I was thinking about the other day, and I was going through like our DMs and you started like posting some threads, which were super helpful. And I remember I reached out and I was like, hey man, like these threads are awesome. Do you do consulting? And you had the most Sean answer ever. You're just like, no, I'm already rich. And I love that.
That's very funny. No, I was definitely trying to recruit you. I was on Twitter trying to recruit a head of paid social. And I got on the call with Cody. I'm like, dude, you don't want to work at a women's makeup brand? Like, we sell cool wallets. You come over here. And then Cody's like, yeah, I'm going to be CMO and I own equity in this business. I'm like, okay, well, you don't get to be CMO at Ridge. But good getting to know you, man. Yeah, and man. You've built a great business. I think we should do intros first. This is the first time our audience is hearing from Cody, and he's on the number one podcast on earth. This is bigger than Joe Rogan. So Cody, tell us what's going on, man.
Yeah. So Chief Marketing and Revenue Officer at Jones Road Beauty. A lot of people are familiar, but you know, clean, bootstrapped, direct-to-consumer beauty brand founded by Bobby Brown, who happens to be my mom. We're about 3.5 years old. We've got a bunch of our own stores, so we're growing those pretty quickly. But besides that, completely D2C and passed, you know, annual 9 figures last year. So I'm now allowed on this podcast.
Dude, 9 figures in
Wait,
3 years.
Shouldn't you Cody be in the big dog chat now, guys? Isn't he allowed
in? So many chats. Let's just cross that bridge another day. Okay. I'm fucking, my iMessage sucks. So, Cody, man, take it away, dude. Where do we go?
Let's chat MediaMix first. Actually, let's chat Meta if you guys want to. I literally came rushed here. I was in the city at Meta HQ today. So if you guys find that interesting, I'm down to chat some Meta challenges.
I think Meta is a wonderful segue from Trust Nobody. So let's start with Meta first.
Man, it's rough. I mean, usually, and I think this is a good way because I'd love to talk about MediaMix. I know you guys have been talking about that with Connor, and I think, you know, we'd love to chat about that as well. But man, it's been tough. This has been an extremely challenging month for us. You know, Meta is usually 65-75% of spend. Usually it's our bread and butter. We do really well. And, you know, without anything changing on our end, it's just been brutal. It's been, you know, CPA is up 25-30%, spend down 30%. So revenue is down, you know, 50% from Meta. Yeah, we've put as much as we can into other channels, but at least for us, like, you know, we can't spend the same amount on TV or YouTube or TikTok as we do on Meta. And it's just been hard. And as Matt knows, we've tested almost everything. I mean, we're on a new Pixel. We tested new ad account. We tested all of these different strategies, tested a cold start. Like, I've been assured, I think I'm allowed to say this, we've had like over 100 hours of senior engineers on our account and they haven't found a bug. So I was at Meta today doing some product research, but of course talking to the team there and just trying to provide whatever conspiracy theories that we have, because it's brutal. It's brutal out there.
So what's the takeaway? What did the Meta HQ meeting, did you get some cool swag at least, something?
I got a Meta water, so that's cool. No, I think the one thing that seems very consistent across a lot of brands is iOS performance is struggling. And, you know, we've been talking to a lot of other brands and, you know, that's really the one consensus. There's some people that are really struggling hard. There are some people that are not. I don't, you know the specifics, but there is something that has seemingly changed with how Meta is processing or accepting or not accepting iOS, you know, conversion data. And, you know, it's something, you know, we're continuing to kind of push and push their team to look into, but we haven't gotten a solution yet. So it's, you know, it's been challenging. I mean, we're still up from last year. We're still profitable. So, you know, want to look at the bright side, but definitely like January, February, we were just rolling. We were up like 50% year over year and both of them just crushing it. And then this thing hit and, you know, everyone says diversify. Maybe we should be more diversified, but like also like when things are good, you want to put your dollars where it's best. And yeah, it's been tough.
Cody, how much did you cut spend?
Meta, we're probably down 30-40%, but you know, we've shifted like TikTok is big, YouTube is big, TV is kind of flexed, but yeah, Meta's down.
I'm surprised you can't spend more on YouTube. That actually is a bit.
We're up shocking. It's probably up to 25% of total.
Okay.
You think we can go above that? I mean, that's the highest we've had it.
I mean, dude, it's always case by case. There's nothing, I have no idea, but like, there's just so much inventory available on YouTube.
We're going to keep pushing. I mean, this is how bad Meta is right now. We use, you know, North Beam for all of our one day click stuff. Our YouTube one day click is better than Meta right now. Usually it's about half of what Meta is. So something is broken. You know, YouTube.
I saw that text to Jeremy, Katie and I this morning that your one day click was better on YouTube than Meta. I'm like, that's not like, a good sign.
And normally it's half and our YouTube hasn't changed at all. And so there's just something just terribly broken about Meta right now.
So Cody, do you think, are you still of the view that this is an isolated Meta thing and not a broader macro thing? Because like for you,
so.
It's Meta specific.
I only have access to our data. I've seen a few others, but Yeah, I think so. It doesn't seem vertical specific. There are beauty brands that are crushing it on Meta, you know, and there are not. So I don't know what the differences are. But yeah, I mean, our YouTube spend is up 50% and our, you know, our ROAS is flat there. TikTok spend is up and ROAS is just barely down there. So like, that's a good trade-off. You know, we're not really seeing it in other places as much or really at all. Yeah, we're not seeing it at all.
Are your store sales? Like, you do in-person too. So like, how are store sales?
Yeah, they're fine.
Well, Cody, I just wanted to say, it's very brave of you to talk about this because it's the opposite of what works on social. Like if you're like a Twitter boy, like people are like, oh, I'm crushing it, dude. Actually, things are really great for me. And I'm not picking on anybody, but you'll see that like people very, very rarely want to share when things are difficult. And what you're saying, I think, is the reality. I mean, we had Roman on 2 weeks ago and he was talking about how he talked to 150 brands, 75 of them are facing bankruptcy because of Meta issues. So yeah, dude, very brave to say that. And also Cody's the lead conspiracy theorist on all the docs going around. He's like, it's probably this thing and this thing. And we had a dinner sponsored by Fulfill a couple nights ago, and there was a bunch of brands there. And I was talking to some of Jason's friends. They also did the cold start. They brand new domain, brand new ad account, brand new billing, everything. And it's slightly better. Like it's not, it's like, I don't really know what the issue is. And it does seem brand specific. So any insight on what the next level of testing should be if you're seeing these issues?
No, I mean, we've tested so much. I think on the bright side, like, you know, Jason talks about, you know, product market fit, product and unit economics a ton. Like we're still really fortunate that we're still growing. We're still profitable. You know, I think, you know, diversification, probably some mixed thoughts there, but it had this happen to us last year. We were probably 90% on Meta last year, 85%. So I am just really fortunate that we have had some diversification and have some other channels we can put spend into. And you know, I'm also like responsible for just like overall P&L and finance. So, you know, I just don't have that much certainty in how we're going to forecast and how we're going to, you know, buy inventory, how we're going to, you know, build our team against this. So we are just building different scenarios and just, you know, being ready for whatever happens. Because the challenging thing, you know, is Meta doesn't know what's happening. And so this could get better in 2 weeks. This could get better in a month. This could be the new normal. And you really don't know. You know, I think I'm probably more on the pessimistic side. So, you know, I would at least rather prepare for that. And best case scenario, we get right back to ripping in a month and they figure this thing out. But right, I got to at least prepare for, you know, this not getting any better.
Have you tried moving up funnel with any of your targeting? Have you tried like add to cart, click, awareness campaigns, anything like that?
No, we haven't tested that. We've tested a few different like custom events and modeled stuff, but no, we haven't tested that. But I did kind of make a decision in the beginning of the month that if you know, spend is going to be shit, it's not going to be efficient. I would rather at least reach new people if we're not going to, you know, be as profitable this month. So I, in the beginning of the month, did shift more to TV, more to YouTube, you know, reach more new people, hopefully. Because if we just keep spend high on Meta, we're going to reach the same people over and over. But they're just not going to convert nearly as well. But we're going to get, you know, less new eyeballs on it. So we are putting more into, you know, these reach top of funnel channels, hoping that, you know, we have a lot of launches in April, May, Memorial Day stuff. At least we can kind of capture some of that value then. We use NorthBeam. We've been on it pretty much since day one. We've used other attribution tools in the past, and they just were not nearly good enough for us. We found NorthBeam to be way more reliable. We use it on all of our channels. My number one rule is, you know, don't trust somebody based on their reporting if they have a financial incentive to make it look better. So I don't want to know what Meta says Meta is providing or Google says Google is providing. I want to know what they're actually doing and having a way where we can compare directionally across them. So we're on it for MTA. We're also on it for MMM, which I'm a huge fan of and has made a huge difference.
Their MMM is actually getting better every day. That's one thing that I've noticed. And I was just talking to Austin and it was a little bit like duct tape and chicken wire at the beginning, but it's definitely getting really good. And in addition, that whole question about like Amazon versus D2C, they're actually helping us understand and answer that question, which is really cool.
Yeah, you guys did good ad reads. I was just going to say, Austin's very handsome. So if you want a very handsome CEO leading your SaaS products, he's the best in the biz.
Cody, can you go back to like a year ago, you were 90% Meta. Now you're, forget the like the decrease in spend, right? But you've layered in these other channels. What drove that decision? So why? Like what were the variables? What were you looking at to say like, you know what, let's try YouTube. Let's push into TV. Like what brought that on?
Yeah, very, very good question. You know, Meta is just what I know. It's just what got us to where we are. I think we all have strengths and weaknesses. I think probably one of my strengths is I am just like single focused. I can block out. I'm like, we don't have to do all these other things. But I actually think that hurt because, you know, I would hear all the people talking about not diversifying too soon and doing things like that. And I'm like, all right, great. Like, we're not going to diversify until we have to. Like, I wasn't really that worried about risk and all in one place. But I think we got to a point around last summer where we were very largely on Meta. We had a little TikTok, little YouTube, but not big. And we weren't growing at the rate that we wanted. And I don't think we were reaching new people as effectively as we could have. And as we were spending more on Meta, we weren't really reaching new people. And so our Meta reps kind of flagged that for us. And Matt, you and I have talked about it a bunch, but like, I did think TV would be great for us. We have a, you know, much older demo who is still watching linear TV. So I did think it would be great for us. But we weren't ready there with our bandwidth and our team to, you know, do the production and do the measurement there. And so, you know, the first thing was testing some Meta reach campaigns, because that was, you know, we could easily have creative for that. But that really helped us reach a lot of new people. It's much harder to measure. So I'm definitely down to chat about that. You know, we were spending still like 10K a day on YouTube, but I didn't really have the confidence to spend more than that, because the click attribution did not look very good. And so I believe over-relying on click-based attribution is, you know, a fool's errand, and it overvalues bottom of funnel channels. And for me being a, you know, performance marketing background, that was just what I felt comfortable with, but I just needed to expand my comfort zone and go beyond that and be able to measure things a little bit more holistically so that we can, you know, find ways to reach new audiences. And I think that's been one of the things that's had the biggest driver on our growth.
Cody, I do just want to say we have to shout out Meta, because in 3 years, you went from nothing to a $100 million plus brand. Like, that is the power of going like super high focused on Meta and like blocking everything out, going deep on that channel. It is the only channel that could have did that for you, right? Like, it's taken Kith 15 years to get to $100 million, right? And that's because they've done like all of this brand awareness, all of this like culture building, whatever. You can get there if you just focus on Meta. But the downside is, yeah, dude, you're pot committed. Like, Meta has to work. And as soon as it starts to fuck up, like it's happening this year, I mean, it's hurting Ridge just the same. And like, you want to just make sure it's not too late to diversify. Seems like you're already doing some good stuff. What if you don't have the budget or the team to diversify like you're doing into TikTok, YouTube, TV, whatever? What's the advice for the struggling brand right now?
So the way that we look at things, and I try to, is, you know, all of our marketing is trying to maximize contribution. You know, last year we really focused on MER, AMER. But, you know, theoretically, you know, we want to maximize profit, right? We want to maximize EBITDA as a, you know, bootstrap brand. And assuming fixed costs are fixed, we want to maximize contribution. So we will just reforecast and look at things within the month. Actually, Sean, that like sensitivity table that you posted the end of last year, I use that pretty much every week. You know, the one where you're like, figure out how low to the ground you can fly. And we'll use that pretty much every week, something like that. It's so simple, but you just got to know your numbers and know, hey, if I'm forecasted to spend 100 out of a 5 MER, 100 out of 4, well, if I can't do that, am I better off spending 120 out of 3.5? What's that give us for contribution? Or should I go 90 and go out of 4? And just finding where you're going to maximize that. And for some brands, you might find that that is actually continuing to keep your spend up, but being okay with that MER and efficiency decrease. For some brands, you might find that you need to just pull back and just wait it out. It's going to depend based on, you know, everyone's unit economics and where they're at. But that's kind of how we think about it and are going about it. Just because total spend, yeah, like we've got more on TV, we got more on YouTube and TikTok, but total spend is still down quite a bit until we get through this.
Dude, well, you hit a panzerism. Know your numbers. That is classic Jason. Jason, how are you feeling about Meta right now?
Well, you know what? I want to also say, Cody, this also affirms why you're lucky. You're not lucky. You're smart. You're able to battle through this because you have a profitable business. You've always focused on having a profitable business. So, you know, you're getting this big curveball thrown at you, and you're able to handle it. So kudos to you. We've known each other for quite some time, and I've always respected the way you run the business with Bobby, and the way you're always focused on making money, right? Build a business that you want to own forever and make money. On Meta performance, we're not suffering. We're definitely not suffering. Except for the fact that we had to spin up an entirely new ad account and pixel because of this other issue.
And almost Shopify site.
No, Shopify we managed to just be, we got. But
you know what? Big shout out to Harley. Almost. Because Jason emailed Harley, and Harley is a billionaire, runs an $80 billion company. And he responded back, and I hope we can put the quote in here. And he's like, HexCloud is important to us. Please make sure this gets handled. And they got it done within 48 hours. Yeah. So yeah, shout out Harley. But anyway, Jason.
Harley was unbelievable. And it was so funny. I sent him a note. I'm like, hey, send me your address so I can send you some cookware. And he goes, nah, man, I'll buy. Keep building. That's Harley's line. Keep building. I just love that. But going back to, you know, us and Meta, I also think it's different for us. Cody, you probably don't have the same conversion lag at Jones Road than we do, right? You're kind of like, it can be impulse enough. And I know because I get Jones Road beauty boxes bought by Lexi, and I'm like, Cody would have sent us some.
Jason's not Harley. But
seriously, like, I know Cody's bought a ton of HexClad, so thank you, Cody. We haven't really been suffering that much. It's really interesting what we're going through because we did, you know, we grew 110% last year and did like close to 400 top line, and so now we're still growing a lot, but it's no longer triple digits. It's double digits, right? And it's like, we have all these different things that we're thinking about. So not only are we dealing with like the Meta changes, but we're looking at the changes in our business. And so there's so much shit to figure out right now. It's crazy.
Jason, I got two follow-ups for that. I think you hit on one a little bit, and I'm curious to hear Cody's thoughts on this too, but you and I have talked about this, Jason. Your consideration window for HexClad is quite long, right? And the one day click that you look for, it'd be very different from what a Cody's going to look for, category and purchase cycle wise. So how much do you worry at all that you're not seeing it yet just because of that lag? That's my first question. I guess two-parter. Are you worried at all then that Meta's actually just not doing fuck all for you at your size? Like if you're not feeling it, my first thing I would ask is it doing anything?
Yeah, for sure. It's one of those things that I wrestle with all the time. Like I am always threatening everyone around me that we're going to just like cut spend drastically and see what happens. And everyone, like I do this like once a quarter and people lose their shit on me.
My heart's warming hearing you. You
know, I'm just dying.
Just run like a 5% holdout, probably for your conversion lag. Just run it for like a month. Just like take 5% of your Meta spend and hold it out so you don't have to like drastically affect things.
So, yeah. So I know you've been a big proponent of those kinds of incrementality and holdout testing. And we just started up with that like a month ago. So we are doing it. I haven't seen any results. I know you talked to Connor. I haven't seen any results yet, but thank you very much, by the way, Cody, for being so, such a hex lad and being helpful with that.
Of course, man. No, I'm pumped for you guys. I think you guys will learn a ton, especially because you guys spend, you know, a lot of channels and spend a lot. And because it's, you know, much harder to track click-based things with that high of an AOV. But yeah, I've heard anecdotally higher AOV seems less affected on Meta right now for whatever reason.
It's because it's the It's because Meta is not very effective for IOV.
Yeah, that may be
it's a bottom of funnel channel.
You asked a good question, Matt. Matt, you asked a good question, which is, well, how do we feel about that? And are we going to feel it later or not feel it later? Damn, I mean, who the hell knows, right? Like, we'll find out. But luckily, like Jones Road Beauty, Hexclad can wait it out. Like, we don't care. I mean, we just like whatever. It's like we don't report to anyone. We don't owe anyone anything. We have multiple channels. We've been ripping on Amazon all year. It's like nuts. It's nuts how we're ripping on Amazon this year. I don't know if anyone else has seen that.
You know, I have a couple of things. You guys talked about, measurement. So we started using House, and I'm sure Cody and Connor talked about this for 8 hours on their podcast, which link in the description, episode one should already be out. But what we found is that since the Meta issues, like they really started to kick off in like the second or third week of February, that the incremental spend on Meta was at a 1x. So we were basically giving Meta a dollar for a dollar in revenue. And that was like fully measured out, not one day click. So we were just spending money to waste money. And we really started working with House in the past like 3 weeks to cut that back. And so this is the first week where we've actually reduced spend by a lot, like 50%, and revenue is exactly the same. So our MER went from 2 to 3 basically overnight. And it's just because you're just wasting dollars on the Meta ecosystem. So, you know, I always tell people to spend more. This is one of the rare situations where you could actually be spending less. Now let's talk about, is Jason going to be fucked in 60 or 90 days? Because if everyone is having issues right now, but Jason's purchase conversion window is so much longer than ours, like he won't feel it until end of April into May. The best thing you can do, Jason, is just get ready for a sale to kick all that to the curb. When you guys run sales, you guys, it's like the Federal Reserve. These guys are printing money, and you have the Memorial Day sale, right? So maybe just think about pulling that up earlier or extending it for longer and trying to push that into Father's Day.
Yeah, actually, we have Mother's Day, and then Memorial Day, and then Father's Day, all bam, 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 bam. And then we have Prime Day, which obviously is Amazon focused, but we have all that. So it's gonna be interesting.
Yeah, so maybe you're go ahead, Cody.
I have a question about that and would love your guys' take. Like in a time like this where, you know, growth is challenging, how do you think about, you know, choosing between growth and efficiency? Because, you know, sometimes you have to, and usually we try to find the right spot. But, you know, let's say you're planning to grow 50% and now it's like, hey, it's way down from that, you know, and not knowing how long this is going to last. Do you think there's a reason to be said, kind of like what Sean's saying, like keeping that funnel full, continuing to spend more because you know you have some big moments coming up, versus if you pull back right now, maybe you're not hurting yourself too much right now, but these events that are in the future, you just don't have as many people in your funnel. How do you think about that? Or if you're giving advice to me, how should I be thinking about that?
I have an opinion. Sorry, I'm going to talk. If all things are equal, and you make the same EBITDA off of more revenue or less revenue, it's always better to make the same EBITDA off of more revenue, because more revenue means more customers, means more upsells, which just protects your future. If you're capturing, if you're capturing customers or brand awareness, Ben from True Classic says this, that like that should sit on the balance sheet. Like, I have 10 million impressions this month. Like that is an asset you'll capture in the future. So all things being equal, if you're making the same EBITDA, I would choose to do that off of more revenue. That's counter to a lot of what finance bros will say, that like, dude, I want a business that does 1 million in top line revenue and 999,000 in EBITDA. But really, you want the biggest, most defensible business possible, in my opinion. Now, that being said, usually you got to sacrifice one or the other. And so would you rather take half as much EBITDA for 30% more revenue? And that's where it gets really challenging. And all of us are like, we're still doing fine. Rich is growing. Jason's growing. Cody's growing. I don't know if Matt's growing or not. But then what if you weren't? That is the real question I think we should be answering. What if you were spending money, more money or the same money year over year, and revenue was down? Then would you actually tolerate less revenue to hit the same EBITDA target? And that is a scary question. And I would love to know everyone's answer on that, because Jason, you're growing double digits. What if you weren't? What would you do?
Yeah, look, it's a good question. I have a bias to sort of minimum profitability thresholds, no matter what. That's like, you got to set the floor somewhere to have a healthy business. And then the growth strategies come from elsewhere. Like, you're not going to, you can only spend yourself so far with marketing. You will need to figure out a new product, a new market, right? I don't think that has to do with profitability necessarily. Sure, you got to spend money in R&D or whatever else, but for me, it's the bias is always going to be toward profitability. We have, like, for example, we have a little, I call it the sweet spot. It's almost like a little regression analysis between sales growth and MER, and in the middle is absolute profit dollars. And we look at, okay, we'll grow. It's sort of like what you talked about. We'll grow at X, and we'll let the MER drop or the CAC increase to get to a certain absolute profit number. But there's like a point on that curve where it's like, hey, no, we're gonna grow less because the marginal dollar in revenue is just it's not worth it for us. So we kind of look around at that, and we do that actually like late October every year to try to budget out, you know, our biggest time of the year. That's how we do it.
I think, you know, Cody, the one way I get a little more nuanced on this sometimes, if I'm confident that the quality of traffic coming in is high, I would sacrifice, I then subscribe to what Ben from True Classic talks about, like impressions and email sign, like all that stuff matters because you will have an opportunity to catch it depending on your consideration windows and all that stuff. So as long as traffic quality feels high, like those metrics look good, I'm okay with losing some efficiency if I can keep pushing. But
so we're like 13% on TV right now. You being a big TV guy, would you go like 25% for now, knowing we've got like Memorial Day coming up?
I mean, House would help you figure that out, right? It's like, so yeah, if Memorial Day is a big, like, so, I mean, I have Mother's Day coming up on Lomi. Our efficiency right now sucks, but I've got 2 years of history now of like spending into Mother's Day with television. So TV is probably 30 or 40% of my media mix at the moment, right? And climbing ahead of the start of Mother's Day. So, but that's just like, again, older customer, and we know our networks. I guess that's the other thing, Cody, like with television, it's like knowing where to spend your money is really a big part of the battle.
Yeah. I just want to point out that all of us, like, you think we're all super cool. Jason playing golf all day, me flying on a private jet, you know, Matt digging around in the trash. But at the end of it, we are all, we're all actually super nerds. Like the fact that Jason can dive in and talk about like what's happening with his CAC, or Matt knows exactly what channels to spend for TV. It's like, if you're not that entrenched in your marketing mix as an executive in your business, you're totally fucked. Like, imagine being just like an old school CEO being like, well, make the money machine work. It's like, dude, there's no place for that in modern e-commerce. You need to know exactly what's going on. And I think we often gloss over that because you talk about operations and COGS and everything else, but the single biggest line item at Ridge is marketing dollars. And you have to be able to know and talk about it like the way Matt talks about it, or Cody or Jason. That's just what you need to learn. Not adding anything to the conversation. You guys were talking about something great about media mixes, but
it's a great segue, dude. I think I drive my team nuts with how much I dig around and poke around and like stick my nose in this shit. Cause it's the other thing too, is like our respective teams, Connor, maybe not you and Connor, Sean, but like I have turnover in my companies. Like that's just natural, right? Like people come and go. I don't. So all the history in this business, motherfucker, I know it. If you like, you come up with some brilliant new test and I'm like, I can tell you I've done it before. So let me tell you how I did it and it failed. How are you going to beat that test? So yeah, you need to be obsessive about this. That is the common thread. I was talking about this with Isaac when I was in LA. Like, he is so obsessive over YouTube. I'm like, no wonder you make YouTube work. He showed me his screen time for the YouTube app. And I'm like, yeah, dude, you're winning. Like, I get it, man. That's more time than I spend sleeping. So yeah, like, you're crushing it.
Yeah, no, I think it's all of us are really CMOs, right? And some of us have better CMOs we can learn from. I get to learn from Connor, but at the end of the day, if you're an executive in an e-com brand, you are a CMO because marketing is the biggest line expense. Yes. So I was on Klaviyo. I just checked. I was paying over $15,000 a month for Klaviyo. And you know, that is the most Shopify will charge you is $40,000 a month. So they were very quickly approaching half of my overall Shopify bill for just being built on Twilio. I mean, that's what, sorry, Cody. I know you're a Klaviyo believer, but that shit is just built on Twilio. And just so overpriced. Since it got public, they're just kind of move up market, went to Sendlane. My bill is down 80% plus, exact same fucking shit. I mean, you're going to give up some features because they're a brand new company and they're building them out. Segmentation, they're working on it right now. But seriously, like, we're looking at cutting SaaS costs right now. And like, I save $10,000 a month. That pays for an email manager. That pays for a graphic designer and an email manager. You should definitely think about leaving Klaviyo. It'll be a little bit harder. It'll be a little bit challenging. But can you imagine saving $100,000? In 2014, I made $20,000 a year. Okay, I worked an entire year 10 years ago and I made 20 grand. There's no way I'm giving a fucking email provider fucking $200,000.
Is that when you were folding shirts at Abercrombie?
I probably worked at Brooks Brothers then. I was an intern at Brooks Brothers in 2014 or whatever. But dude, Abercrombie wouldn't hire me. Have you seen the way there's no way I'm getting an Abercrombie, dude. That was for the hot guys. You know, Connor worked at Hollister, so he could get it, not me though. But Cody, so we talked media mix, we talked efficiency. Where is your mind going for 2024? What do you think we should be thinking of? And then Matt's queued up the real question. Matt has a real thing he wants to ask you.
This is where my mind is going for Jones Road Beauty or just, you know, e-com in general.
Dude, let's do both. I want to hear both.
So trying to keep it pretty simple, but as you guys know, and as I have learned from you guys, you know, it's not just about where you're going to spend more money. It's about the, you know, the activities that are going to allow you to do so. So Matt, what do you say? It's product, market, channel.
Product, channel, fit, man. That is
no, like, but there's three things. You said there's like three ways to grow: products, channel.
Oh, products, and markets, and channels. Always. Yeah.
So product launch. I mean, a normal beauty company launches probably four times a year. We continue to launch about once to twice a month. And those aren't all big things. Some of them are kits. Some of them are, you know, promos like Memorial Day, where we don't discount, but we'll do some exclusive stuff. And then some are shade extensions. But yeah, we've got probably, you know, somewhere around 18 to 20 launches this year. And so that's, you know, hopefully significant. We are in, you know, US, UK, Canada, and Ireland right now. But in planning in September, we're going to go EU. And so hopefully that'll, you know, just have more places to spend and ways to reach new people. And then retail's growing. We have opened one store so far. So that'll take us to four stores. We're opening up another one in 15 days. I think as of today, we just signed another lease. So we're also growing our retail footprint pretty quickly. And that's, you know, one of our diversification strategies.
How's retail doing, Cody?
Amazing. It does really well for us. I think a lot of people would guess that it's more of like a marketing thing. There's really very little evidence that it's demand gen. It's more demand capture for us. We spend almost no marketing on it, right? We spend obviously a ton digital now on TV. I forget the stat, but it's a very small percentage of beauty purchases happen online, right? Most people are used to going into Sephora. So people want to try products. So, you know, no matter how well we market online, you know, there's always going to be a certain number of people that are more willing to, you know, get it in store. And we've also been opening up in our strongest cities for the most part. So, you know, our New York store does extremely well. We've got a Montclair, New Jersey store that does amazingly well. East Hampton. We just opened Palm Beach. So it'll be interesting as we open some stores that aren't in our top cities. We've seen some slight increases in online traffic when we open, but not really revenue. But yeah, so we're not really putting any marketing dollars on those P&Ls. We keep it strict to, you know, 20% of revenue on payroll. Our leases are, you know, really reasonable. We don't need giant spaces. You know, I love Glossier more than anything in the world. I think their stores are beautiful, but they're putting millions into them. Bobby is taping up photos on the wall, like literally printed out photos. So it's like our aesthetic. So it works. It's our aesthetic. But yeah, we have a very short payback period. And after that, they're very profitable. So, you know, my focus is, you know, why aren't we opening up as many of them as we can?
I was going to say, what stops you from opening more stores if they're so effective? This is like the Warby Parker thing. It's like they make so much money.
Team bandwidth. It's just, we're never going to be Allbirds and open up 15 and hire, you know, hire VPs to do it. Like Bobby's still very involved. My dad, who's chairman of the board, he's a real estate developer. So him and one of the other board members is, you know, plus me are like the guys who are actually finding the leases. You know, we're not working with an agency. We're doing it ourselves. Like that's just our way. Like we don't have a traditional business. We don't have a CEO. Like we're very like in the weeds and probably to a detriment. But, you know, I also think that's a little bit the fun of it. So, yeah,
I just want to say, you're a family business. I think some people on Twitter sometimes like to give you shit because you work at a family business. But Ridge is a fucking family business. My brother's a developer. My fucking wife does stuff for us. We're a family business. And like Jason, HexCloud's a family business. Like, even though it's a bunch of ragtag, like, you know, you guys are all brothers. And that's why you have such a hard time kicking people out, right? Like, there's something beautiful about building one of those. So I love to hear that, man.
Yeah, when I first heard, Cody has met everyone, right? He knows all the boys.
You guys are a married couple. You guys bicker as much as me, Bobby, and my wife, who's also in the business.
I know. It's like this one calls that one to complain about the other one. It's like round robin.
I love it.
Cody, do you wish you had done retail sooner? Because it sounds like a home run.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely didn't want to do Sephora. Bobby doesn't want to do Sephora. So we're not going to do that. We have one wholesale account that's in the UK, and we'll likely pull out of that and open our own store there. I just don't like it. There's a time and a place where to grow the business, we'll probably need to do that. Hopefully that'll be on somebody else's hands and not us. It's just not, you know, not the game we want to play right now. I don't know. It's going well. We did sooner. I wish we grew it faster. I wish we are growing it faster, but it's also working well and we're growing. So I got no regrets, but I will say I would not have expected that it would do so well. I was against it and I was very wrong about that. So not too proud to admit that.
Dude, are you making a store in the Hamptons work all year?
Yeah, but it's tiny. Like it's the size of my office. It's like, small. We just keep, you know, rent small.
It's crazy to cash flow that. I mean, if anybody knows about the New York like retail market, typically you go into the Hamptons only for the summer and a pop-up and it's to lose money. So making that work all year is very impressive.
I appreciate it. Yeah, we just like to keep it as lean as we can, keep it as small as we can. Like we were looking in Brooklyn, you know, on 6th Ave, which is like the really popular busy street. Glossier's there. There's like pretty much everybody there. Like, we were just looking at some of the numbers for rent and we're just like, how are people affording this? How are people doing it? So we're going to be blocks away, but we're going to be like a quarter of the rent. And we've proven that we can drive our own traffic through digital, through TV. Like it's pretty crazy. But like, for example, we launched like a gift with purchase ad on Meta over the weekend just to try something new in the stores. Like people are getting bombarded with like asking for that gift with purchase. Or we had like a mascara ad that took off one time and mascara became like our top seller in the stores. So for us, all the evidence is it's really more of like a demand capture tool. And so, yeah, I guess the more stores we have, hopefully the more we can capture.
So Cody, when you said like you didn't think it was going to work and you're wrong, I actually don't think you're wrong. I think it probably wouldn't have worked a year ago. You know, you've just built up so much brand awareness with all the spend that you've put into Meta. And you're right, it is demand capture, but you built up to this. So I would argue that you just did it at the right time.
That's fair. It's working, so I will not complain.
Cody.
He's like, yeah, fuck it.
I have a question on the, you made a comment that you've been opening up stores in your best markets. What, like for a New York, which I'm assuming is like your best
market. Yeah, strong. Yeah.
Right? Okay. What is the difference and how do you measure a market? Like what is the difference between like a New York and everything else? Like, is it, do you look at it like on a per capita? Like we do this much business in a city with this many people on a per capita basis. It's that, like, how the hell do you, what's best? Can you define that for people?
Yeah, we don't have a data team. I would love to build one, but we don't. So it's literally me or, you know, somebody else just pulling Shopify reports of, you know, sales filtered by city and something like that. So it's really just by city or zip or state is, you know, another way to do it. So there's not like a lot of rigor behind it, but just looking at, you know, what are our top 10 cities? What are our top 15 cities?
So you just do it by total sales volume.
Yeah.
Fucking hell, dude. Just break, go by household. You don't need a data team for this. Cody, take your sales for like your, you know, top 20 cities by volume and then do it on a how many households there are in each city. And it's like when we did that, I found cities and I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. We like 3X per capita in this market. Why? Right? Like it's not our biggest volume though.
I feel so dumb for not doing that.
Yeah, but with Cody, it sounds like all of his, well, I guess you open Palm Beach. I was going to say all your stores are just, you can drive to them. There's an advantage of doing it in your backyard, but I guess you guys are breaking out of that now. You're going to open stores like in California or whatever.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just, you know, more challenging from the construction side and everything, but we obviously want to expand. So yeah, you know, we're thinking Boston, we're thinking Dallas. And I feel like once you got that, you know, that's a flight away. So why not do LA and then, you know, and then London.
Okay, well, dude, listen to Matt then. If you're doing them outside your backyard, yeah, you should figure out you're going to over-index somewhere. And maybe it's not Boston. Maybe it's
big
Charlotte,
cities
North Carolina.
Like, you know, every brand I talk to, it's like California is our best market. I'm like, yeah, but is it? Like, is it actually like on a per capita number of households? Like, is it actually beating? And when I looked at other brands and other data, I'm like, actually, no, man, it's Denver. Denver's beating the shit out of LA. Like, that's actually where you should go. I would just look at the data.
A lot of the places were strong, like even if you just look at city, are not where you would expect. I mean, we're a very like natural makeup look. So like outside of New York and LA, it's like Denver is very strong. Portland is very good. Seattle is very strong. So it's like very interesting. Not saying we would open in those markets, but it's still fascinating to look at.
100%.
Hey, Cody, on Europe, we should chat. We did that. We're there, and I know Sean has too. One thing that I think has really held us back is like sending, just thinking that it's fine to do stuff in English. It's really held us back. I don't know what your plan is for that, but like good markets like Germany, I hope you're going native.
We weren't planning on it.
Yeah. We just started making our shit native in Germany, France, Italy, whatever. So we just started that process. Definitely there's a conversion boost. Cody, have you looked at bringing, I mean, if you're already in the UK, you've probably done this, but like how difficult it is to take a cosmetic brand to Europe because France basically only exists as a luxury good market. They have so much regulation to fuck over brands trying to enter that market. So you guys are probably experts and I'm probably an idiot when it comes to this. You got Bobby Brown, who's probably done it for 30 years. So I'm sure you can figure it out.
I'm not an expert, but we have an ops team that I trust a lot and they've obviously put a ton of time into it. But yeah, Jason, we weren't planning on it. My thought was let's start not translating, you know, minimum viable product, lean team. You know, we'll still do, I think I've heard Sean say this, but you know, we'll still do decently. And then we can figure out if there's a market that's either doing great and we think it's worth investing in, we can do that. Or if there's a market that we think would do better, maybe it's like France would do better if we translated or Germany, then we'd probably do it in the future.
Well, we took that approach and I will definitely say, dollars to donuts, do Germany in German, dude. That's a huge market. It's like, imagine going to England and marketing to people in French. No way.
Yes.
That's just my two cents on the matter.
Good to know.
Matt, last minute questions, dude. Rapid fire with Cody. Anything you want to say?
I don't know. I'm good. I'm actually just thinking about his stores and why aren't they opening more? If they do so well, it's bothering me.
Okay, I want to circle back to two things then. Jason, you said you're crushing on Amazon this year. What's the secret?
I honestly, I think the secret is that Amazon really likes how much we sell and is basically paying for Google ads. That's what I think is going on.
Yeah.
Does that piss you off though?
What's that?
Does that piss you off a little bit that they're paying for HexClad Google ads? Don't you do that?
A little bit. I also think it's because of the scale of our brand now, and we spend so much off Meta that, you know, people just hear about us, see about us. They just, they Google us and, or they just go right to Amazon. You know, I think it's just like, we're not just like a D2C brand now. We're a global omni-channel powerhouse brand. And I think that's just more people are hearing about us and they just go and they type it into Amazon and they see how great our reviews there and they just buy. It's like the new normal, I think.
Totally. And then the thing I want to ask Cody, he referenced the everyday doomsday doc I put together one time. Do you actually use a copy of that doc to help run your business?
Absolutely. I do. I use it for forecasting for this year, just playing around with, you know, different scenarios. And then, yeah, occasionally looking at monthly or even daily, I'll play around with a few different scenarios just to get some sensitivity to how things change. I do every day.
Hell yeah, dude. Well, it'll be linked somewhere down below too. Maybe there's a screenshot on screen. It's just a Google Doc, dude. It's free. Figure out when you break even for your brand. It really helped get Ridge to where we are. But Cody, anything last minute stuff you want to say? And then we'll do the outro.
No, I just honestly, this is the only podcast I listen to every week. I'm not going to be able to listen to it this week because I can't listen to myself on it. But I really appreciate you guys having me on. I have learned a ton. So hopefully I've been able to give back to people listening.
Dude, you hear that, Nick Sharma? You've been dropped. All right, that's the Operators Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Operators Podcast. That's episode 50. I'm Cody, and if you liked what I had to say, we have a new podcast just launching, the Marketing Operators Podcast. Little bitty spin-off of this one. And if you didn't like what I have to say, the other two co-hosts are much smarter than I. Connor, CMO of Ridge, and Connor, Head of Growth of HexClad. So tune in. Episode 1, launching now.
Triple C's. Let's get it done.
Three C's. All right. Love it.